welcome to This Upbeat Life, the show where we take a light-hearted look at life, what makes us tick, and explore what makes people happy. I'm Simon JJ Green, and I'll be interviewing ordinary people from all walks of life, as well as looking at the latest in wellness, health science, nature, and the quirkier side of the health and well-being industry. Now, please remember that the information and opinions shared on this podcast are for general knowledge and informational purposes only, and do not constitute medical advice. Now, let's get on with today's episode. Welcome to my podcast, This Upbeat Life, and today I'm joined by Anne. So Anne, just introduce yourself briefly.
Hello, Simon. I'm Anne. I live in Buckhurst Hill. I'm from Liverpool originally. And I know Simon through work many decades ago, but also through scouting. Lucky me.
Lucky you. Are you working at the moment?
I am.
All right. And what do you do?
So I work for myself and I work in health and social care, mainly trying to ultimately help improve people's lives, help reduce qualities, remove barriers and enable people to be seen with the value with which they deserve to be viewed and contribute. And
so you're working with a particular group of people?
I work with people who generally would be seen to perhaps use social care for whatever reason. So that could include older people who require care and support, disabled people, people with mental health support needs, and lots of people with a crossover of all of those needs and facing those barriers and discrimination, if you like. Okay.
So since you're still hard at work, what do you think are the positives of your job?
I think it's feeling that somewhere along the line you can make a positive difference. That to me is, I suppose, what keeps me going. But what I get a buzz of on a day-to-day basis is just meeting some like incredible, absolutely incredible people, whether that's people who work in the field, but more so people who themselves are disabled or facing certain barriers, including some hugely impressive people who've got such resilience or have campaigned so much for themselves or for others through their lives. Yeah. To, you know, challenge inequalities and, you know, improve life, not just for themselves, but for everyone.
So that must be quite rewarding then to see that some people actually benefit really much from what you're doing and the challenges that they face in overcoming those. And what about the stresses for your job? Do you feel you've got any?
Yeah. How long you got? It's so I suppose the main stresses are, I suppose, being able to sort of see and having seen in some areas what good can look like or what people have fought for good to look like. And, you know, people having worked really hard to sort of claim their rights and make them a reality. Things like moving away from really institutionalized ways of doing things.
Yeah.
And then having to sort of battle on a day-to-day basis where it feels that because of a whole load of challenges, money included, but not just money, that it's hard to maintain the momentum moving forward.
Sure. Yeah.
And convince people that it's a better way. There's better ways of doing things which benefit the whole of society rather than just let's contain things as much as we can.
You think people don't like change? Or is it more economical just to stay away?
I think it's a real mix, because I think if you did things well, there'd be financial gains.
Yeah.
You know, that would be financially beneficial for the whole of society. But because the way budgets are carved up, someone's thinking, oh, I can save 50 quid this week
by spending
a bit less money on that person, and that will make their life more difficult, but it's worthwhile doing it to save that money.
Right.
Whereas the cost of that is that person may then not, you know, contribute to society as much as possible. Sure. They might have more emotional challenges and so on. And then other people around them who either work with them or in society then might view them less positively and start seeing people as a drain. And then we get sort of added cycles of discrimination. And I think people being siloed into thinking just about small areas of focus of work is what I find most frustrating, because breaking people out of that to just see people as people and really think about, you know, what do we all gain from these things is really, you know, what gives me a buzz in my work. But when it doesn't happen, it's the opposite. Yeah. And it's a lot to challenge.
Very frustrating, and I imagine.
People gain from being able to put forward meaningless stats and meaningless figures and so on, which you think, you know,
it's not reflecting the real world.
You pull it apart and you think, well, you know, people are facing much wider barriers that we need to be able to work on together.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you.
It's lazy thinking, I think, Simon, that frustrates me.
Okay. I guess there's a lot of institutionalization that, you know, even when we were working together a million years ago, it doesn't seem to have much has changed in terms of, you know, breaking out of that idea of institutionalization, because people are comfortable with stuff, aren't they? They don't like to move on from something.
Yeah.
Anyway, so do you consider yourself an introvert or an extrovert or perhaps something else?
Ooh. I think maybe a bit both. I think probably more lean into the extrovert.
Yes.
An antisocial extrovert, shall we say, Simon.
But that's like that T-shirt, isn't it? The antisocial social club.
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. So I think, yeah, I love people. I love being around people.
Yeah.
I don't mind my own company. I don't think I'm particularly shy, and I don't think shyness is a bad thing. I think it's an underrated thing. Mm. But I think, yeah, I'm probably more leaning to, if I have to, I'll be the one to grab the microphone. Would I elbow people out of the way to grab it? Depends.
Actually,
depends.
I think I've seen you do that before.
No. I was only giving out badges.
that's good to know. So I am fascinated by TikTok health trends and wellness trends. And I'm just wondering, have you tried any? I mean, I don't know if you go on TikTok or not, or anything like that, or Instagram. So are there any sort of crazy health trends or something that you've seen or heard of? So, for example, one of the ones that I saw the other day was people put those cucumber slices on their eyes to reduce the puffiness and cool the eyes there. And I've seen some young people now take it a step further and use wet tea bags, you know, old tea bags to do it. But they end up looking like pandas because they have these great big dark circles around their eyes. I don't know. Have you tried anything or looked at anything?
Well, It's really interesting because the cucumber and tea bags, I think that sort of thing's been around for a while, hasn't it? And sometimes these things come up in real cycles. You know, I remember when I was a kid, you know, it was common for people to say, oh, eat fish, it's good for your brains.
Mm.
And then it was like, oh, you know, oh, that's what your auntie says type of thing. And you think, well, now it's like, oh, omega-3 and,
exactly,
you know.
Yes.
And so I think sometimes that things come through and perhaps now come through as trends but feel perhaps more convincing because there's a bit of science added to them or a bit of pseudo science.
Yeah.
Or siloed science.
Yeah.
Because that mightn't be good for the cucumber. Wow. For like but trends for me, I'm not on TikTok. I am on Instagram, so I see a little bit on that but very limited. I did, if it's any help, I did sort of do Atkins as a weight loss thing,
oh, right.
Like 20 odd years ago. It was a revelation, actually, because everyone's perception of it, and it, you know, there probably are elements, are that it's really, really unhealthy, and that all you're ever going to do is eat greasy spoons.
Yeah.
But all I found I did was eat what I usually eat, but minus the chips or minus the rice or minus the potatoes.
Yes.
And so almost by accident, I'm cutting out calories straight away.
Yeah.
And by cutting out those carbs, for me, it helped contain my appetite. And then it also forced me to cut out things like the devil's work that is Diet Coke.
Oh, right. Yes.
Evil organization. And I stopped eating chocolate as well, which I used to have great joy from chocolate and still do. And that, interestingly, big fad that it was at the time, it actually felt like a big shift for me felt much sort of healthier just getting rid of some of these cycles with sugar. And it gave me, and it gave me huge amounts of energy.
Oh, right.
And I lost, you know, a fair amount of
weight. In some ways, it's almost sort of like goes against the grain that you were eating loads of fat and greasy food. And you think, that can't be good for you. And yet, that is a trend that has stayed, actually, for even, I know a young person who's in their 20s was doing a similar, it wasn't called the Atkins diet, they called it something else, but it was identical. Yeah. And do you still do the Atkins diet, or you're not?
I don't, but it's, I am quite conscious of stuff if I feel that, if I'm feeling hungry all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I sort of do think, I just need to stabilise my blood sugars.
Yes,
just go in a bit more proteiny or whatever for a few days.
Yeah, yeah.
Does sort of help balance that a little bit, but
okay.
I don't take too much notice of my diet really at the moment.
Well, if you're happy. Okay, so do you have? I mean, what is your biggest pet peeve? So what grinds your gears the most?
Oh, my word. Anything.
What sets you off?
injustice and, I think, rudeness, but more selfish rudeness.
Yes.
But I think generally it's sort of injustice. I'll get mega worked up with what's going on in the world or what's going on in society.
Well, there's a lot to get worked up about, isn't
there? there really is. Yeah, there really is. So,
okay. One of the previous people who interviewed, our common friend, his biggest pet peeve was rudeness or people. What was the other one he said? People who didn't keep their word.
Oh.
Yeah. So, for example, somebody said they would be there at a certain time and were very late or didn't show up, or they said they'd do something and they wouldn't do something, you know. But also people just generally being rude, really pushed these buttons. And do you, with all the horrors going on in the world at the moment, do you find that gets to you, or do you manage to turn it off? It can be quite overwhelming, I think.
Yeah, it can. And I'm, I suppose what I do about it is, I'm sort of quite involved politically with protests, demonstrations and things. And, you know, whilst that mightn't have a major impact, for me, at least it feels I'm doing something. You can't do something about everything and you can't do everything about something maybe, but at least sort of feeling, well, you know, I'm not just sitting watching. I'm trying to do something. I'm trying to raise awareness. I'm trying to make a difference. I'm trying to understand. You know, because answers often aren't particularly simple, but sometimes you can see the outcomes of what's going on.
Sure.
And that, I think, for me, is a real trigger to think, I just can't stand by anymore.
Have you?
That helps with the frustration, but it also adds to the frustration because you learn more. As you get more involved, you sort of learn more, and the injustice of it feels even worse, and it's harder then to turn it off.
That's why I'm saying about being overwhelmed by what's going on, because like you said, once you start digging and looking at everything that's going on, it's actually quite horrifying, the stuff that is out there and what you might have to deal with. I mean, have you glued any body parts to the road or anything like that, or been arrested yet?
Not in recent years. I mean, I was quite involved in sort of non-violent direct action going a few decades back. In fact, I was once picked up from a lie-down protest, and I've really been so insulted. I had a couple of police officers call over for extra help to move my protesting prostate body, prostrate body rather, off and away. You know, I did that bit where,
that's okay.
So, used to do a little bit of ways of bringing things to people's attention that might get one proscribed these days.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. But I've been part of lots of sort of recent demonstrations and
yes, yeah, there's a few issues.
Rights and things, and that in itself is a positive thing. You know, people on the demonstrations and so might be angry about what's going on.
Yeah. Yes.
But they're together and there's a collective voice, and so it doesn't feel like being part of a negative experience in doing that.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, just going onto something completely different. What music or singers are you into at the moment? Do you like?
Well, I
mean, has it changed much since you were a youngster?
Yeah, it's partly changed, but I suppose just sort of new layers come on. There's lots of music that stayed with me from my teenage years, and I think that's just part about being really lucky of growing up in the 80s when there was such amazing music that you still hear.
Yes.
And late 70s that you still hear all over the show now. So yeah. I suppose lots of the 80s electric stuff I really like. But then I suppose added to that, the more thoughtful, well, what to me feels like really good thoughtful stuff, like Everything But The Girl.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, really good. Indigo Girls, which I suppose I got more into.
I don't think I've heard the Indigo Girls before.
Bit sort of folky, country.
They're British?
No, they're from the States.
Oh, okay.
They're from the States. But okay. They've been around a fair while. Suzanne Vega, so I suppose I've gone a little bit more folky as I've got older, and then I really like indie music.
Yes.
You know, real mix of, I can't even think of all the bands, but...
Well, you're into like the Britpop and...
Yeah, really like sort of Pulp and Blair and, you know, all of that.
Temple Tudor,
driving back from Wales with a load of happy scouts in the van. Yeah, absolutely. I love music.
It's great stuff, isn't it?
It's brilliant. Yeah, it's absolutely brilliant.
Were you part of the, you know, growing up in Liverpool, were you sort of, did you have a hangover with the Beatles still having an influence back then, or are you not so much? Like for me, I don't like the Beatles, and people are horrified when I say that. Well, it's, you know, never floated my boat as such.
It's really interesting because I think there was a bit of a grow up when you were aware, you know, of the Beatles. But Liverpool wasn't, you know, in the sort of 70s, early 80s, it wasn't like mega touristy. So you weren't confronted by so much of the imagery, tourist centres, let's go and revisit the cavern and all of that.
Have you ever been to the cavern?
No, I've walked past it, but I'm sure it's moved from where it used to be.
Sure it has,
I didn't really have that mega connection. I remember when John Lennon died, that obviously was a massive reboot for Beatles music.
Yeah.
And in fact, I remember going into school and our English teacher in 1980, when he'd been shot, our English teacher was crying.
Oh,
and
wow.
I'd heard on the radio on the way that, you know, he'd been shot, but I didn't really think that much of it. And then
it was only
afterwards, and I went into Liverpool with a friend, and there was this big event, you know, everyone on the steps of St. George's Hall all singing Imagine and Give Peace a Chance. And I think after that, there was a big wave of Beatles stuff, and I bought a few of their albums then. But before then, other than hearing them on the radio and, knowing quite a bit of their stuff, it wasn't a big impact.
Yes.
We had more family tales of one of my uncles by marriage knew Cilla Black, so we'd get more...
Nothing wrong with Cilla Black.
And I think Ken Dodd's Tears for Souvenirs was number one when I was born. Oh, so I think,
me.
Yeah.
Ken Dodd was good in his day.
Nice voice. But not so good a pain as Texas, maybe.
So tell me, what are some of the positive things that you like about yourself?
What a question. I like about myself. I think I like getting involved in stuff. So I think I've got quite a bit of energy and conviction.
Yeah.
I like to think I'm reliable.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be upset in your previous interviewee, I hope. I'd be there early, hiding around
Martin,
the corner to make sure I'm not looking like I'm too keen. I think I'd be fair. I can be, particularly my external self when I'm out and about, quite cheery, quite upbeat.
And you said you earlier that you liked your own company. You know, you're quite happy on your own. And so when you're by yourself and poodling about and so on, do you think of yourself being more introspective, or are you still quite sort of like quite cheery as you go about your day and doing things?
Yeah, it goes in real waves. I'm sort of cheery by myself, I think, when I know I've got things planned and I've got things coming up. So I can be sort of then feel like I'm being quite purposeful in what I'm doing with my own time. Because I'm getting these things ready for this, or I'm finishing off this piece of work, and then that means I can go and do something else. So it's not like I'm always waiting for the next thing to happen, but I think it's having an overall framework within which I can then be on my own and be quite productive and feel like I can get on with things. And
do you think that you could be on your own and do nothing?
No.
No, see, it's quite fascinating.
No, I couldn't.
I've done an earlier podcast about that. That, for example, younger people especially were put in a room for, say, 10 minutes, and there was it wasn't dark or anything, but they're just in a room on their own with their thoughts. No phones, no nothing, nothing intrusive. Or there was a button where they could give themselves a mild electric shock. Every single person would rather electrocute themselves than be on their own, be alone with their thoughts. So I just find it fascinating. I was like, so you couldn't do it. You couldn't just sit there. And I guess if you thought it was only going to be 10 minutes, you could do it.
I could do it. Yeah, absolutely I could. And again, I think about it, it would be about thinking, how am I going to use these 10 minutes?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I'm just going to sit and think thoughts and be purposeful with my thoughts.
Yeah.
As opposed to just sitting there and thinking, oh, right, what's going to happen now? What am I going to do? So it's almost like I'd have to galvanize myself to think, this is what I'm going to do now, as opposed to I'm just left completely to my own devices and I've got no access to putting the radio on or doing something.
Absolutely
like
fascinating.
Cooking something, hoovering, making plans.
Doing something, yes.
Yeah.
Got to do something.
Doing something,
very interesting. Mm-hmm. So have you got any tips yourself for staying fit and healthy, but especially perhaps around mental health?
Yeah. So I think have a purpose. Mm-hmm. Whatever it is, don't think it matters much exactly what the purpose is, but whether it's, you know, to feel like, oh, I'm going to finish something today, I'm going to make a difference today, I'm going to make a step towards something, or some sort of sense of feeling like you're contributing to the greater good, whatever you perceive the greater good to be. I think staying connected, well, this is certainly for me, I think staying connected with people.
Yeah.
So not necessarily surrounding yourself with people all the time, but knowing that others rely on you.
Yes, yes.
That you're adding value to other people's lives and letting them add value to yours. And having things for yourself that you think, I'm all right, I can be a little bit proud of that.
Yes.
And whatever that is, you know, whether that's thinking, oh, I've just done something to really help someone.
Yes.
Or I've just done the dishes.
It's still an achievement, isn't it?
I mean, for me, it is that feeling like, I don't necessarily mean like a little tick list or a checklist, but just little things where you sort of think, that was all right. That was a couple of things on the right step today,
Aiming for something that's just achievable, you know, small, achievable things.
And I think that's really different from sort of setting yourself, oh, I must get a first in my degree, because I think, you know, whilst that might be brilliant for some people, it's just about, are the things in your day-to-day life that you can think, I've made a little bit of progress towards them today. Yeah. And even if you've hit a hiccup, you think, well, that's progress because I've learned from that.
Sure.
That's something I know not to do in future.
Okay. And I bump into you in the forest occasionally, and you're out on your walks, and I'm obviously with the dogs. So do you find the physical aspect, you know, physical fitness an important part of your being healthy?
For me, it's absolutely essential. Absolutely essential. And I think the thought of not being able to have that outdoor connection or connection with nature, or being able to be physically active in some way
would have
a real detrimental impact on me. I'd have to, if the forest was taken away or the ability to be out and about and physically using my body to get around, whether it's on my bike, whether it's walking, whether it's attempting to run, I'd have to think really carefully about how I replace those things. So I get a real buzz from that. And I know there's lots of research that actually being outside to do your exercise adds an extra layer of dimension. It's all so personal, isn't it? Whereas for some people, I imagine that might add some extra stresses, even if they're getting more oxygen from the leaves. But yeah.
I've spoken to a fair few people over the last few years about being out and about, especially greenery and so on and so forth. And interestingly, a few of the people, because they're my sort of age, have been incapacitated in one way or another, illness and so on. And one of the number one things that they get upset about is the fact that they can't go out, and that they're stuck in bed or whatever. And they find that that is quite a demoralizing thing for them. So we know that for people that are recovering from illnesses or perhaps even suffering from depression, that being outdoors can be a great alleviator, I think.
Yeah. And I think, Simon, because it brings me back to sort of thinking about my work and why it's really important to me. And, there is that thing about, you're spending so much time working with people who've had some of that choice and control not being so available to them for a whole range of reasons. And again, I'm sort of conscious for myself that, the physical exercise is absolutely vital. The outside, the nature is really vital. But there are a couple of things I do inside in terms of watching television, which I'm not mega keen on telly, but things like, which always surprises me, if I watch Spring Watch, I get a little bit of nature buzz from that and the gentleness of it. And similarly with ITV's for coverage of the men's Tour de France, there's something about the pace and the music. And so it's almost like finding things that, if you can't be outdoors all the time, or are there things that give you that peace of mind and connection with nature and a pace of life that works for you?
That's what you're looking for, isn't it?
And that's what, absolutely.
Excellent. Men's Tour de France. No, I'm not going to forget that.
Well, it's only because the coverage of the Women's Tour de France isn't on ITV4, so you don't get that nice little... You have to just watch little highlights of it unless you've got TNT.
Okay. Have you got any hobbies or favourite things that you do in your spare time?
Yeah, I do. A few things. So hill walking is a hobby.
Excellent.
And so walking in the forest, I suppose, is part of helping to try and keep me fit for that. But I do it of its own right. I have to change my route sometimes because I see the same people and they probably think, gosh, she never works, that woman.
I actually probably see you more in the forest than I do anywhere else.
Exactly. It's just the rhythm of the day, isn't it, who you see? And that's a really lovely part of it. So hill walking I'd call a hobby. And I love everything about that. Whether I'm on my own or with a very, very precious friend, walking in the hills, planning the route, debriefing on it afterwards, because it doesn't matter what we've done, we're always like, wow, we are just brilliant having done that. I can't believe we did that,
Excellent.
Whatever the conditions.
That is an achievement, isn't it?
Going out on my bike. Bit of cycling, following football, following Everton, and all the community connections and nostalgia as well as the sport.
I mean, Everton football, you were on the TV, weren't you?
I was on the telly.
You were interviewed.
I was hijacked outside the Goodison.
I was very impressed with that interview. It was very good.
I'd like to say I was offered a chocolate bar for it, but I wasn't. So they're my main hobbies. And then helping with the scout group, which has been, I suppose, part of my life for the last 15, 16 years now.
Exactly. It's only an hour a week, isn't it?
Only an hour a week. Term times.
Exactly. Do you have or would you have a life motto? Like my father's life motto was sod 'em all.
Sod 'em all.
My dad's one.
Sounds like a fine man.
It was great.
But I wish I had
a little bit more than a...
That would be part of my motto as I get older, that I'd grab a little bit of that. Care a little bit less about what people think, and but care about the world.
Yes.
So my motto would be, I suppose, you know, maybe do what you can to make a difference for the things that matter for you.
Very good.
Yeah.
Okay. Excellent. What is there one piece of advice, or maybe two, you would have told your younger self that you can share with our listeners, especially for women growing up today?
I'd always preach tolerance, but I think there's something about women growing up and young women growing up is be less tolerant.
Mm-hmm.
I think women are brought up...
Less tolerant of what?
To be really polite,
mm-hmm.
and to listen and to agree and to conform. And that doesn't mean there aren't amazing, feisty women and girls out there, because, you know, there are.
Yes.
But I think there is something that girls get taught very much, listen and agree. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that probably builds the confidence of those who they're listening and agreeing with.
Yes.
And I just think, you know, just when it's rubbish, just call it rubbish and walk away. Because I see now, and I go and hover near it, you know, you see young women and girls in all sorts of situations. But say, for example, on the tube, guy comes up, probably no ill motives,
mm-hmm.
but you can see a young woman looking a bit uncomfortable, wanting to move away, but doesn't, because she doesn't want to offend, because she's been taught not to offend.
Yeah.
And I just say, offend as much as you like. You keep yourself comfortable. And in doing that, that might send out sort of messages that actually that encroaching on your space and on your sense of self is, you know, it's sort of not okay. And I look back and, you know, I was always quite, I suppose, strong in myself, but I do look back and I was in, you know, some situations where I just think I should have just said what Helen Mirren advises.
Yeah.
You know, do one, you know,
yeah.
you don't know better than me. And,
exactly.
you know, you don't have any right to make me feel like this or whatever. So I think for you know, just... worry less about offending people.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
as long as you're not seeking out people to offend, but if people are making you feel uncomfortable in any way,
do you feel then that perhaps things like, especially social media, is empowering for women or absolutely the worst thing that's ever happened?
I think it's really double-edged. I think, you know, all of these things can go both ways, can't they? I think in some ways it gives people a very... It's a way to get views out there. It's a way for people to get noticed.
Yeah.
But I do think there is, you know, and loads of people might agree with me. It's just my perspective. But I think there is a retraction of expectations in terms of how women should behave look.
Sure.
And, you know, in particular, how they should look. And I just think that does get accentuated by social media and some of the quite negative comments and vibes and trolling and so on that can happen.
I mean, it's quite...
because you're on that platform is horrendous. And the use of misogynist language, which just seems to be completely acceptable now, is quite horrifying.
Quite deranged people out there on social media. It's just unbelievable. Okay, great, thank you. Is there anything that people would be surprised to know about you? Like, you can speak 25 languages or something.
Oh, I wish. I wish. I think years ago, it used to surprise people when I said I played rugby. Because rugby is, for women, was so invisible. And, you know, we were part of the first wave of playing football, playing rugby rather. Also in primary school, we... Mm-hmm. challenged and set up our own girls football team in a pushback to us being banned from the playing fields.
Wow.
catch a girl, catch a boy, kiss a boy or something we were playing, and subsequently got banned, and the teachers were too embarrassed to say why we'd been banned. They said the playing fields were only for the boys, and we were like, well, that's wrong. Sort of 1975 or whatever, that's so wrong. You know, they said, well, we can't just be for the boys. And they were like, no, actually, no. They're only for football, the playing field. So we said, well, okay, well, we'll play football then. And
excellent. Did you get many girls playing?
Yeah. In fact, it led to, so we set up our own school in our own team in Aintree.
Yes.
Two of the male PE teachers coached us, and they were brilliant. We entered Simon. We entered the Aintree Gala football competition, which was the height of the social and sports year in Aintree, in North Liverpool at the time. Never had they had a women's girls' team enter. They didn't know what to do with our entry because they'd already accepted us before they realised we were a girls' team.
Oh, excellent.
And anyway, they deliberately drew us against Valentine Boys, who were the best team in the area. And we took the lead against them. Caroline Lamb scored a screamer. It's just brilliant. And there'd never been so many people come to the gala because it was such a novelty. And then... anyway, we ended up losing 6-1. But, we'd only been playing a few months. It's...
And so did other schools or anybody...
As a result, word got out. And so quite a few other schools in McGall, Aintree and around North Liverpool started setting up their own girls' football teams. It ended up being able to kick off a league.
Well, I mean... and look where we are today with the Lionesses and everything, eh? I mean, I think they got some of the highest viewings for women's football ever, wasn't it? The recent cup they were playing.
Absolutely. And, we did that. I hadn't realised, and I'd probably been, I was born in 65, so I'd probably been a bit too young to even realise it was going on. But the World Cup in 1970, 71, for the women in Mexico, I had no idea about that. We just hadn't seen any role models. And it was only, I think, when I'd teenager or gone to university, my dad had managed to work out the video recorder and had recorded footage of women playing in the 1920s at Goodison before 54,000 people watching it. Dick Kerr's Mill Girls playing St Helens, I think.
Lord.
And then it was very soon after that that the women got banned from using FA grounds because it was unseemly. You know, and you just think, well, these things can happen and we've got to keep hold of them. And, but the other message, I suppose, in terms of well-being and positive is change can happen.
Yes.
And change doesn't get gifted to people.
No.
Change happens because people fight for it. So, we can all make a difference. So,
there's no magic fairies out there to make.
Yeah, brothers, sisters, it's up to us, isn't it? So
exactly. Have you got a bucket list?
No.
Or is that? Oh, for example, or is there something you still want to achieve that you haven't quite done yet?
There are hills I'd like to go up.
Okay.
But yes, I haven't been up in the Lake District. Not many, but there are a few. I think there's countries I'd like to visit. I'd like to get more off the beaten track, and I'd like to go camping more. So it's all quite achievable things, you know, I've got a big dream to do X, Y, and Z, really.
Yes.
And,
that's good. Well, that's nice to know there's still mountains to climb, isn't there?
Yes, exactly. I
mean, I'm personally hoping to climb Kilimanjaro next year, but we'll see how that goes.
I nearly got to the top of that, Simon. And
did you?
Yeah, I did. I did in whatever year it was, 2000. Yeah. And it was great. I had a wonderful experience. But my friend who I was with, she's fit as a flea, absolute bouncy flea, but she got dreadful headaches the night, because they get you up in the middle of the night to get up to the peak. So it was like our fifth night on the mountain, or the beginning of our fifth day on the mountain or whatever. Yeah. And she was so poorly. I was just thinking, oh, this could go horribly.
Oh, no.
This could go horribly wrong. So...
so close and yet so far.
Yeah, so we went back down with our guide and made the decision that we wouldn't go back down and wait a day and back up. So, yeah, but wonderful. It was great to do.
Oh, good. Well, you've done that then. Apart from money, is there anything or one thing that would improve your life? Or are you quite happy with the way things are? Was it improve your quality of life?
No, do you know what? For the things that I could potentially have a bit of control over, there's not too much there's not too much I sort of think, oh, that would make a massive difference, you know.
Yeah.
Obviously there's people you desperately want back and things,
sure,
but you can't do that. And having stability of money, resources, somewhere to live. I think, you know, if you've got those fundamentals and you've got, keep close your connections with the people who really, really matter to you and invest in that, you know.
Yeah, yes, yes.
You know, sort of work out what's important. No, I just cannot think of too much other than the things I want to do, like touch wood, staying healthy as long as I can. And yeah. Keeping working at that and being with the people I love. I'm a lucky woman, Simon.
Keep climbing the mountains.
Keep climbing.
Okay, well, just completely different now. Have you met anybody who's famous or was famous?
Yes.
Next.
Yes, I have.
Go on. Just keep me in suspense.
Well, this just sounds, this sounds really odd. And I know I've met other people, but this one's come to mind.
Yeah.
And when we were youngsters,
yeah,
my sister and I, both sort of crazy Everton fans.
Yes.
My dad liked a beer. And he came back from the pub one night. It must have been quite late because Sue and I were already in bed. And he came up, knocked on our room door, and he said, I've got someone to meet you. And so we must have got dressed and gone downstairs gone downstairs in our PJs or whatever. And it was a guy who was called Ted Sager, and he was Everton's goalkeeper, and he had the most performances for Everton for years. I think Neville Southall might have taken over. And he played for England, and my dad had met him in the pub. And he'd met him before, but I think my dad probably had enough to feel emboldened to say, could you come round?
Right.
And so, but it was one of those where you had to be introduced to him because he was quite a bit older, he wasn't currently playing.
Right. Okay.
And so,
okay. Yes.
So that was good. That was a real privilege.
That's great.
Ted Sager. There you go.
What about donuts? Have you got a favourite or you don't like them at all?
Oh, I'll eat a donut, but I find a lot of donuts these days are really, really tasteless.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when we were kids, we used to go down to the Pierhead in Liverpool with my nan. It's like where you used to get the ferries across the Mersey.
Yeah.
And there was a little shop there and it used to have one of those donut machines that,
all right,
you know, you'd see it go through and just fry the batter and it'd come along on a little grill and then drop off and land in a load of sugar.
Yeah.
And then three small ones would go in a bag. Yeah. You know, one for me, one for me nan, one for our Sue. And you just, the grease, it'd be on you till your Sunday bath the following week.
I asked this question to everybody that I interview because I love donuts myself. And I find that the tastiest donuts I've had in this country are always at the fun fairs, things like that, you know, just like you said, where they make them in front of you, basically, or on a pier.
Yes.
And they're still hot and in the sugar and everything. And,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But not the supermarket ones, like those Krispy Kremes and stuff. I can't be having that.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Well, we have similar tastes then. I do like a ring donut. Okay, so again, something completely different. So I'll keep you on your toes. Do you believe in ghosts, the paranormal, or something similar?
Oh, Simon, you can't ask me a simple question without getting a really long answer.
It's all right. So yes, no.
Everyone's
going to
be
the long
fast
answer.
Asleep.
It's fine.
No, I don't,
yeah,
but I have seen a ghost.
Have you?
How do you reconcile that?
Awesome.
How weird.
Okay, go on, tell
How
me about
that. How utterly weird is that?
Great.
Right, so youngsters aged about 16, 17, group of us doing our Duke of Edinburgh training up on Pendle Hill in Lancashire. So Pendle Hill, renowned for the awful persecution of the witches.
Yeah.
And we were up there, March, February time, weather was grim. You know, it's just the rain coming sideways. We're laughing our heads off all in our nylon cagoules and, you know, shoes that don't fit. You had your long football, you know, socks pulled over your cords. And we got to near the top and coming from the side, the sort of sides are sort of steeper. And we walked up the sort of long shoulder of it. Someone just appeared and it was this woman in a white dress, sandals, walks past us, says hello, like friendly people do on the hills, goes off, walks down this sort of steeper path as opposed to the path that we'd come on. And we were all like, looked at each other, a group of five or six of us. And then we all ran over to the edge, to this path that she'd have gone down. Not a sight of her anywhere.
Wow.
Weirdest thing. So we were like, how weird was that?
Ah.
A few years later, I was working, for Bernardo, supporting people into him. People with learning difficulties into employment, went on my training in systematic instruction course, seven stages of helping people learn skills. I was driving there through Lancashire. It was in Leyland near Preston, at this old staff NHS staff house. And I was with this guy, Brian. And as we drove in, he went, whoa. And I looked and went, whoa. This woman that I'd seen on Pendle Hill.
No way.
Was sitting on a gate.
Bloody hell.
Just as along this track that we drove in.
Yeah.
And anyway, when we spoke to them in the staff house, you know, the people who ran it, they said, oh, yes, it is haunted. So I don't believe in ghosts of the paranormal, but I have had a couple of like really
That's
weird.
Really impressive. God.
Well, I suppose it's not inexplicable. It could well have been a woman in a white dress sitting on a fence. And that course was in, that was December.
Yes. just happened to be there. My goodness me.
And I said to Brian, I know it. He's just like, oh, weirdo.
So, well, sort of keeping in a similar vein then, how would you like to be remembered? I mean, so for example, would you be cremated, buried? Would you have a statue made of yourself or what?
Yeah, so...
Or you just think, once you're dead, you're dead, that's it. Just stick me in a hole.
Yeah, no, I suppose I'd like to be cremated, and I think that's just from what I've grown up with, and you know, and what I've seen. I would like to be remembered, but you know, just by people I've known and loved, and not so that they're devastated and things. But no. I suppose I'd just like to be remembered as a decent person, really.
Fourth Prince and Trafalgar Square, something. I'm sure that I think though that we all know, you know, if we've done good in life, then you are remembered, aren't you?
Yeah,
because you have changed, you know, affected change for other people. Yeah. I think. But I've been fascinated by the things that you can do nowadays. So, for example, you know, you can be cremated and have your ashes put into a rocket sent up and boom, to rain ash on everybody. You know, so various bits of you over there. And, you know, you can be put into a tree and grown as a tree. Now, all of these eco-friendly, you know, cardboard coffins and things like that. I mean, me personally, I would like to be buried at sea. I
think. Would you?
Yeah, so I've got a great affinity with the ocean. So I think I would love to be, you know, torpedoed into the water, be fish food.
Yeah, that's, yeah. You know. But does that involve sort of having to go into a weighted sack? Because otherwise,
so there's different ways of
pop up somewhere.
Yeah, there's different ways of doing it.
It's like come up on a beach in Cornwall and like ruin everyone's holiday, Simon.
I actually did find a body on the beach once.
A human body?
Yes, yes, in Hong Kong. Back in the 1970s, all the Vietnamese boat people were leaving Vietnam, and unfortunately this poor soul had made it. It was on a beach in Hong Kong. That was I didn't know that at the time, but it was fairly common to find that.
Yeah, good grief. I mean, God, anyway. You know, people are so brave, aren't they?
I know.
You know, just
try and escape.
You know, people must be escaping something pretty grim to take the risks that they... But I like what they do with bodies in... is it in Tibet where they leave them out on the mountainside and the vultures come and... I think that's quite nice.
Yes. Oh, actually, I could do a Viking burial. You know, put you on a longboat and send you out to sea, and then somebody's got to shoot a burning arrow at you.
Yes.
At the boat, yeah. So, and imagine, they miss and the boat just sails off into the distance.
Yeah, there you are, yeah.
Okay, last question. What makes you happy? Do you think that that's what makes you happy is the same as being content in life? Or are they separate things?
I think increasingly what makes me happy is the things that brings me contentment.
Okay.
And I think years ago, the things that made me happy and I had a right laugh doing, you know, having a beer or two, dancing all night.
Yes.
You know, loved them at the time and, you know, that was a buzz. But for a level of much deeper sort of happiness, I think it is. It's the, family, friends, purpose, exercise, nature. Those, however many I counted there, I just think so fundamental to... Excellent.
To your happiness.
To my happiness, which I think is getting closer to contentment.
It's not just sitting there with your slippers and the knitting or anything like that.
Not
I can't imagine you doing that.
Not yet. I'd have to go back 50 years to remember how to knit. But it's so important, isn't it? You know, and I think there is that difference. And I think there's something as well, and, you know, sort of message to young people. I think young people are great at having fun. I think, you know, they teach us so much about, you know, just being able to laugh and live in the moment. And I suppose as I go through life and get older, I don't expect to have fun all the time. I don't think happiness is just about having a laugh. But I think there is something important about being able to still be able to laugh like a kid and learn from young people, and, you know, let them show us a little bit about...
Absolutely, definitely.
Stop moaning, Anne. Stop moaning, you know.
I think we're allowed to as we get older. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you, Simon.
That's been really good. And have you a shout out to any friends and family?
Oh, well, I suppose I'm so lucky, you know, one with my lovely family, the people I live with, Jackie and Adam, or Paul, Matt and Bex, my niece and nephew. But I've got so many lovely friends, and I feel really lucky and privileged to live in this area, because I have made new friends, particularly through scouting, and it's really I find it fascinating, because they're, you know, perhaps some people I wouldn't have otherwise connected with, because I'm not going to meet them. Some of them I'd meet on my demos, but there are people who's perhaps, you know, we're not aligned in that way, but you can sort of see people are great people and really kind. And, you know, through coming here, I've met you again, which is really lovely. And, you know, that full circle back to Hackney as well. So,
Okay, great. All right. Well, thank you very much. That's brilliant.
Thank you, Simon.
Okay, that wraps up the show for today. Thanks for your time and for listening. As always, I'd appreciate it if you could like, follow and subscribe to my show, This Upbeat Life, so I know I'm on the right track. And even better, leave a review and share it with your friends. Now here on This Upbeat Life, you can share your thoughts, you can ask questions and be part of our growing community. And if you've got a story for far out stuff, or you just want to get in touch with your health and wellness stories and ideas, then email me at thisupbeatlife@gmail.com and I'll read it out on the next show. You can also find me on Facebook and Instagram as This Upbeat Life, and on Blue Sky as Simon JJ Green. And until next time, remember, happiness is the best medicine.